KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. It's the Bill Handel Show. Bill's off today. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Gary and Shannon. Coming up in 15 minutes, plus or minus, another chance to win $1,000. And coming up immediately, the supply chain problems are now extending to vinyl records. Now, depending on when you grew up, you may have grown up with vinyl records and are well-versed in the joy of opening a double gatefold album cover and perusing all of the artwork, the lyrics, the liner notes, having to pull this big round platter out of a sleeve and stick it on a thing. Or maybe you grew up when you never saw vinyl and it was all CDs. Or maybe, if I'm talking to an elementary school child right now, maybe all you know is streaming. Isn't all music in my phone? And the answer to that question is mostly now all music is in your phone. Streaming is 84% of domestic revenue for the music industry. But there's still sales of physical media. For example, in the first half of this year, 16 million CDs were bought. Who's buying CDs? Maybe if you have a car that has one of those old CD changers in it, you still use CDs. And that was $205 million in revenue from 16 million CDs. But beating out CDs, the vinyl records, which have made a big comeback, 17 million of those were sold in the first half of this year. But guess what? It's not that many more. But it's over double the amount of revenue, $467 million. Because guess what? Vinyl records now are kind of pricey. And so the music industry loves the resurgence of vinyl records. There's a bigger profit margin. The problem is now they cannot make them fast enough to meet demand. And it's affecting everybody from small bands on small labels all the way to some of the biggest music stars that you could think of. Let's start on the small end. There's this record company, very small, in Indianapolis called Joyful Noise Recordings. And they issue vinyl releases of underground rock. And in their office, they have this thing that looks like a... It's about the size of a microwave, and it looks like some weird, I don't know, ham radio or something from the 1940s, but it's actually a Presto 6N record lathe. And it is used to cut vinyl records, but, oh man, does it take time. You know, back in the day when the big labels were putting out vinyl all the time, you could cut tons and tons and tons of vinyl records very quickly in big plants. This machine there that they have at Joyful Noise Recordings, you have to cut them one at a time, and they're cut in real time. Meaning if you have if you want to press a single of a 3-minute song, you have to cut each one of those 45s separately, and it will take you 3 minutes to cut each one. It cuts the grooves in real time. That's not the commercial way of doing it. But even the commercial way of doing it now is pretty old-fashioned. Most of the bigger record pressing plants are using machines from the 70s. So the point is, for this record label, they would normally place orders with the bigger commercial plants. But those places are way backed up. You might have to wait 12, 15 months from the time you submit a master to the time you actually get your vinyl. So when they need to do something with a special release, somebody has to go over to this old machine and just stand there all day. It takes hours and hours and hours just to get a few of these vinyl records out. Let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Adele, would we agree Adele is one of the biggest music stars of today? Well, she's got this album coming out. I think it's called 30, and it's coming out in November. And they had to plan very far ahead because they had an over 6 month lead time to get the vinyl pressed for her upcoming release. And the only way that it's going to be, and in fact, they had to push the release date a couple of times because they weren't going to be able to get the vinyl made. And vinyl is now a big deal again. People say it sounds better. It probably does sound better. I think for most people, it's easier to just start streaming something from the iHeartRadio app or wherever you stream your music. But for the purist, vinyl is the answer. And because enough people have decided they're purists, you can't make those records fast enough, and it's starting to impact that industry. And it was kind of a bright spot, if you will, an economic bright spot of the pandemic, because sales of vinyl were already ticking up, and then they doubled. Right after the pandemic started, everybody wanted vinyl, and sales doubled. You'd think, here's an industry that was able to flourish, except it became so popular, now it's crippled them. All right, let's get a news update from Jennifer Jones Lee, and then we'll come back and give you a chance to win $1,000 and a big controversy here about what to do with the LA Zoo, because some people have a plan to make the zoo like another Disneyland. This is KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. It's the Bill Handel Show. Bill's off today. Coming up at 9:30, Foodie Friday with Neil Saavedra, the Fork reporter. In a moment, what do they want to do to the LA Zoo? They want to compete with places like Disneyland and Universal Studios, but now, your chance to win $1,000.
KFI has your chance to win $1,000.
Text the nationwide keyword
deposit, D-E-P-O-S-I-T,
to 200-200.
You'll get a confirmation text and info.
Standard data and message rates apply in this nationwide contest.
That's deposit to 200-200.
If you win, your phone will ring. It'll be a number you don't know, and you've got to pick it up or else they'll move on to somebody else. Every weekday, there's a chance to win starting at 5:20 in the morning with Wake Up Call. Goes all the way through 7:20 in the evening with Conway. That's Monday through Friday. Tons of chances every day, including another chance just an hour from now. Well, there's a big battle going on over the future of the LA Zoo, because what the zoo would like to do is spend $650 million greatly, and I mean greatly, expand the footprint of this zoo and put in all kinds of big, big features. They call it the 20-year vision plan. There is no doubt, and part of the reason there's no doubt is because they've said so, that one of the big motivating factors here is there's an Olympics coming to Los Angeles in 2028. People will be coming here from all over the world, and they want them, the city of L.A., which runs a zoo, would like them to have a big attraction right here in the city. Now, Universal Studios is in the city, but they want the zoo to compete with Universal Studios. Because currently, the overwhelming majority of visitors to the zoo are local people. It's not when people come to L.A. from France or whatever, they don't necessarily get around to going to the zoo. But if you expand it and you put in things like Condor Canyon, a massive, well, canyon where they're going to have to blast all the way down to the bedrock and create this canyon. I think in there they're going to have some kind of like rock climbing facilities that you could do. Tons of meeting space and restaurants and just, it's going to turn into this big thing. So wait a minute. If you've been to Griffith Park, you know where the zoo is, and you know what's around the zoo. The big parking lot, of course, and across the street is the Autry Museum. And then, you know, a little ways up here, there's a playground, and the carousel is kind of over there, and there's a golf course. And then there's a lot of still basically untouched land, nature. Native woodlands, impressive trees, certain shrubs that are actually on the federal and state endangered lists grow in those undeveloped parts of Griffith Park. Coast live oaks, California black walnut trees. There's all kinds of animals that live there, which is what was originally intended, of course, for Griffith Park to be. It was not intended to be some big built-up tourist attraction. Well, in order to expand the zoo the way they want to expand it, they're going to have to tear out all of the remaining native woodlands. 23 acres gone. Turning Griffith Park into even more of just a built-up modern-day tourist destination and way less of an oasis in the middle of this city. So, as you might imagine, environmental groups are very much opposed to it. And at some point, fairly soon, the city council will take it up. There is a committee. This is the name of the committee. The Arts, Parks, Health, Education, and Neighborhoods Committee. They could break that up into smaller committees, I think. And what's going to happen is a negotiation, and there'll be some kind of smaller scale compromise, I imagine. It's a risky proposition to spend all this money to turn it into this big thing that you think is going to share equal status with Disneyland and Universal Studios and Knott's Berry Farm and Magic Mountain. The zoo now requires almost half of their operating budget to come from the city's general fund. The zoo is not paying its own freight. They think by projecting with whatever weird algorithms they have that if they sink $650 million into it, if they destroy all of this natural stuff around it, that eventually they'll be able to attract so many more visitors from all over the world that they'll make their money back and they'll be able to be self-sufficient. But there's no way to know that. They may say they have formulas and projections, but that is BS. There's no way to project what kind of revenue a zoo like that's going to bring years from now. But they're hell-bent on doing it. And so, you know, the irony is that in order to expand the place where they keep animals as prisoners, they're going to destroy the habitat where animals live naturally and freely. And then they're still going to end up in the hole financially. It's going to be a big boondoggle because this is Los Angeles. All right. News update from Jennifer Jones Lee, and then it's time for Foodie Friday with the Fork reporter himself, Neil Saavedra, coming up here on KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the Bill Handel Show. Bill is out today, but that does not change the fact that it's time for Foodie Friday with Neil Saavedra.
I'm starving.
Food. Glorious food.
Do you know how to cook? Or do you just know how to put trash in the oven and then put it on a plate?
It's Foodie Friday with Neil Saavedra on The Bill Handel Show.
Good morning, Neil.
Well, good morning, Wayne.
Can I start by asking you a question?
Oh, boy. Here we go. Yeah.
It's not a question with a factual answer.
Doesn't matter. Bring it. Opinion. It's Friday. Whatever you want to ask me goes.
How many alternative plant-based proteins does a society really need?
Oh, the smart-ass answer is the first one that I wanted to say, but I don't know.
There seems to be no limit.
It's like, I don't know, how many vegan cheeses do you need? How many alternative proteins would fit on the head of a pin?
Hey, can a alternative protein get through the eye of a needle? But a regular protein cannot get into heaven?
Let's see how philosophical we can make
no,
this.
No, no, nobody
morning.
Wants that. So my point is this. Everybody knows about Impossible and Beyond Meat And there are at least a dozen kind of not as well-known plant-based alternative protein things out there. But now, other people say plant-based alternative proteins aren't the answer. Animal-based proteins, but not from animals, is the answer. Please explain what that is.
Well, you know, this is an interesting thing because a lot of it comes out of information that we're not sure about, which is that you've got vegans that don't want to eat anything with a face, God bless them, and then that's great, but then there's vegans that don't want you to eat anything with a face, and they're looking for reasons why that's bad for everybody, for people that don't have a moral opposition to eating animals. So the biggest one is the amount of land that it takes to have livestock. About 15% of Earth's land, so says they, for grazing, grasslands and the like, and around 40% of cropland to grow the feed. And they say with all of this and the greenhouse gas emissions that this creates, they believe is around 14.5%, they want it to be stopped. So there's a push for meat alternatives. The problems with the current meat alternatives is they are incredibly uber processed. And that will become a problem eventually. Just like when margarine growing up was the hot, oh, this is going to eradicate all the evils of butter. And then now we know that butter is far superior to a lot of those other types of margarines and substitutes. So this battle's going on, and now you've got an emerging class of proteins that are made, literally made, rather than grown or traditional harvesting of animals, which is to raise an animal and then kill it. So this is like the next wave, and it's much closer than people think. This, the future now is real animal proteins, but it's cultured. So it's all in vitro from cells harvested from animals, but the animal doesn't have to die to make it. And we can see this as soon as next year or the year after in restaurants and the like. It is not to the point where you can make enough of the product at a decent cost point where we're going to see it in stores or anything like you do the analogs, the meat analogs that they have currently. But it's coming. And this, I mean, you can't say, I guess, that it's harming an animal.
Yeah. What do you do? Just swab the inside of a chicken's cheek?
No, it is cells. They've got to, you know, take them somewhere. Does a chicken have a cheek? But they, you know, take it.
And I'm just saying, where are they getting the, if
isn't this
if
how someone, the Handel twins were made?
No.
No? Okay. I get confused with the science.
I don't know how this is going to satisfy a person who does not want any animal harmed, inconvenienced, treated unnaturally. They have to get a cell from an animal somehow. So okay, it almost reminds me of the people who say they won't take a vaccine because it was derived from old line stem cells.
Yeah, which,
fetal stem cells.
Can a vegan get the vaccine?
There's a lot of questions here that we're...
Well, I'm just saying that the fetus didn't have a say.
The point is that we weren't satisfied with, if you don't want to eat meat, here are all these plant-based alternatives. Somebody else is trying to solve, I guess, a different problem?
Yeah, but here's the thing.
With this cultured meat?
The whole point is to get people off of eating meat. And when you get multiple excuses or reasoning behind that, really it's just... people don't want you to eat meat. It's not about whether they want to eat meat. They don't want you to eat meat. And mm-hmm. I get that based on the cruelty and the all of those things. We do have massive issues with farming. Absolutely. We produce way too much meat, and we produce it under horrible conditions, and all that needs to stop. However, meat is a part not only of the culture, but absolute the history of humanity. Humanity could not have done what it did without the necessity of meat. So you come to this place where they're saying, trying to solve multiple issues, and we shall see. There has to be a point, because you're also going to be looking at something that I think is even more practical, and that is bug protein.
Oh, I know. You're a big proponent of this.
I'm not a big proponent. I'm just somebody who believes, one, as far as vegans are concerned, evolutionarily, there is no reason, we have no science behind it that says that there is any sort of pain mechanism for certain insects, because they don't live long enough to have a need for it. Pain is something to protect you for longevity. So they don't have, and so, and you can just raise, I mean, pound for pound, you can raise and harvest a crap ton of protein in a very small space. So it kind of answers a lot of questions and issues. So I think that that's going to become a necessity. It's not that we're going to be eating whole bugs. We've started out with flowers, bug flowers and things like that. I just think that that's a super easy, no factory, nothing pumping out steam, smoke or otherwise to produce versus some of these other things. And really, when you start going down the path of trying to duplicate something that nature has created, you know, none of us were fooled by the sets on Star Trek.
That's true. Know? All right, let's get a news update from Jennifer Jones-Lee. And then will you please tell us, what is Nooch? It's some kind of an ingredient, and it's called Nooch, and it seems fun, and I want to have it, but I don't know what it is or what to do with it. Will you help me?
Sounds like a bully on a 1980s sitcom.
Yeah.
Nooch.
Oh, no. The Nooch is here. Hide your lunch money. But that's not what it is. You'll tell us what it is coming up here on KFI AM 640 Live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. It's the Bill Handel Show. Bill's out today. Gary and Shannon are coming up at 10 o'clock. And also keep in mind, 20 after the hour, it'll happen again at 10:20, and it'll happen every hour until 7:20 today, and then all next week, Monday through Friday, and on and on and on and on, an opportunity to win $1,000 from KFI. It is Foodie Friday. Neil Saavedra, the Fork Reporter, is here. Are you going to now tell us about this mysterious super ingredient, Nooch?
There's that name, Nooch. Nooch is actually just nutritional yeast. And nutritional yeast is
Wait a minute.
Used, yes, hello.
Oh, I feel defrauded.
Nooch?
Because so Nooch is a nickname for nutritional yeast. I thought Nooch was some kind of super new thing, but it's not. However, that having been said on my part, what's nutritional yeast? What is it anyway? How do I use it?
It's a dead yeast, but it has no leavening properties or anything like that. And what are you doing back there, little guy? Sorry, there's weird noises coming from behind me.
I understand.
I assume they're my son. So nutritional yeast is a dead yeast. It doesn't produce the leavening properties that yeast is normally used for. It is super duper, just like the name implies, nutritional. It's packed with all kinds of good things in it. But the thing that is most important is it has this incredibly savory, cheesy, slightly nutty, like to me, like a harder cheese, like a Parmesan flavor. So it's used to kind of make a non-dairy cheese taste like cheese. And I've been very impressed by it in the past, and it's used for other things as well. But that's the primary thing, is this makes people think non-dairy cheese is cheesy.
Wait, is this the stuff that's in Vegemite? That's a good question. Different?
I don't know. I wouldn't eat Vegemite if there was a gun to my head.
Oh, my goodness. You have a wife and child to think about, though, so maybe just eat that Vegemite.
No.
Okay.
Do they want a happy husband and dad or
what,
a dead one?
What specific... Oh, my goodness. This got very dark very fast. What?
It's Halloween time. Ooh.
What is nutritional yeast a substitute for? In other words... You would use it instead of either a different ingredient or something that occurs naturally in a food, but you want to make a different version of it. Like, what is it a stand-in for?
Oh, well, they use it as a, and I say they, those that don't eat dairy, would use it in a mac and cheese, would use it on popcorn, would use it to make a sauce. That's the way, one of the ways I've seen it used is like nacho cheese sauce. And it actually really does a good job. There's something really unctuous and yummy, and I don't know, it works. But it also thickens sauces. It just has this way about it that it, for whatever reason, it mimics a lot of the things that we like about cheese. Because we've all heard it. They used to be the vegan killers were... bacon and cheese. Those are the two things that is like, well, you can't mimic. Well, there are great nut cheeses and great dairy-free cheeses that aren't just for, you know, vegans, but really there are a lot of people that can't eat dairy or don't eat dairy. And putting these things together or coming up with something like this ends up taking them, you know, through the path of missing one of the most glorious things on the planet, which is cheese.
Right. And so no lactose, obviously, in this nutritional
Correct.
Yeast. Is there any downside, caveat? Is it finicky to deal with? Does it have some nutritional bad things about it? Is there anything bad you can say about Nooch here today on KFI?
No, not that I've ever come across.
It's all upside.
A lot of these things, you know what's interesting is if you go back, there are a lot of things, recipes and cooking techniques that were vegan and had been long before that word ever existed. If you look at some of the time-tested things, they're actually quite wonderful and work very well. It's when you start adding, strangely enough, the science to it and start mixing up a lot of things. For instance, jackfruit is a great substitute or an analog for pulled pork because of the nature of the way it's grown and the way the fruit is processed when you pull it apart and you season it, not processed like in a factory processed. Those things work really great. It's when you start getting into things like trying to make something with science where I think you end up having a bigger issue with the ultra processed and all of that stuff. Whereas, you know, this stuff is just, it's filled with iron and vitamins. You got vitamin B, you've got 4 grams of protein in this stuff. And it's, 0.5 grams of fat. It's actually really, really good.
All right, I will check. I will get a packet of it and just put it in my mouth. And I will listen to you. The Fork Report with Neil Saavedra tomorrow from 2 to 5 right here on KFI. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Shannon and Gary. Oh, I'm going to start calling you Shannon and Gary forever.
Okay.
I'm going to flip the order of it.
I love it.
What do you guys got coming up at 10? Or am I not supposed to interact with you right now?
Well, I love to interact with you, Wayne. Matt Gaetz, it seems like all those rumors about him paying women for sex, well, the feds are doubling down. They've added 2 more federal prosecutors to the case and delayed his wingman sentencing because he is spilling so much dirt. So bad news for Matt Gaetz. Also, CP3... Alec Baldwin kills someone on set, and what we know about the Brian Laundry mystery and what the parents knew as well. It's all coming up next on Gary and Shannon.
And this is KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.